By the time I think I was about 13, I tell the story often that when the first Gulf War broke out and Christian Amanpour was reporting from the Gulf War, that was the first broadcast of a war in 24-hour news coverage.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
We were glued to our screens, yes. Right? I thought, this is absolutely remarkable. And I thought, I want to do that. Really? I think I can do that.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Chica Travel Podcast. I know that it's been a long time, but I promise it's going to be worth the wait. So today's guest is someone I'm very excited to talk to. I'm always excited about my guests, but yes, I'm excited to talk to my guest today because she is someone I first saw on television. And then years later, a few years ago, I actually listened to her on 702. She used to have this feature about Africa Connected, where she was traveling different countries and she was coming onto 702 and talking about her experiences in these countries. I was like, oh my goodness, what if I had a podcast about travel, doing what she was doing? Mm-hmm. So basically, this is someone who inspired my podcast. Aww. So Nikki, welcome to Chica Travel.
Thank you so much. I'm so delighted to be here. And honestly, I'm a big fan of your show. So.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. I'm so happy because for me, it's like, this is someone who I watched. Firstly, everybody who's, knows anything about news, we know your name. And I think the 702 piece for me was the thing that was like, wait, what is she doing? And it really, really made me pay attention. I never missed that. I mean, it was not like, I think it was like 8 episodes or so.
Sure, it was 8 episodes, but we did it over 2 years.
Really. Was it over two years? Okay, so it was long. Yeah. It was long. Yeah. So I never missed an episode because I was like, this is something absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. So welcome and thank you.
Thank you so much. I am honored and humbled to be there and I can't wait to chat to you.
and also because you are also someone who loves travel and I think something else that was like, okay, now I have a door. She's not doing that show anymore, but there's a door for me to get to talk to her because she's also traveling a lot. Mm-hmm. So maybe let's go back to Cape Town, Mthatha, that little girl. What was the thing that said, I want to know a lot more about the world?
Oh my goodness. As you say, I mean, I grew up partially in Mthatha and Cape Town. Mm. I'm the youngest of 3 siblings, a very fun-loving, boisterous little girl, but also liked to spend time by herself. Mm. And in those musings and meanderings by myself, I like to read. Mm. So reading transported me across the world. And we lived, as most families do, with extended family and family members. And one of those relatives was my aunt, Andoli. Andoli had been a teacher at one of the missionary schools in her heyday. And she revered the news. Mm-hmm. So everyone had to pay attention when the news bulletin came on Radio Transkei, it was at the time, or Mhlobo Wenene, or television news. And she insisted that we follow the news. And as the youngest, if my 2 older siblings were out playing and, things that they wouldn't share with me, I would be stuck at home with Uandol. Oh. So I would be listening to the news. So I would be asking these very precocious questions about the state of the world when I was a 7 and 8-year-old. So I became attached to knowing, to being curious, and understood it to be a fundamental skill to know about the world and to understand it better. So I think that was my first interest in news. Mm-hmm. By the time I think I was about 13, I tell the story often that when the first Gulf War broke out and Christian Amanpour was reporting from the Gulf War, that was the first broadcast of a war in 24-hour news coverage.
Oh my goodness,
We were glued to our screens, right? I thought, this is absolutely remarkable. Look at this woman on the front lines telling the entire world what is happening in real time. And I thought, I want to do that. Really? I think I can do that. Because books had inspired me. I'd become a daydreamer. Mm. I started imagining myself all over the world. What must it be like to be in Timbuktu or, Bahrain?
Yes.
What are these places? It all seems so magical and curious. And I suppose so I developed an interest in trying to understand the world and also to tell the news to the world about itself.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. This is crazy. And you were so young at the time and you followed through with that.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And I think I'm very grateful because often that doesn't happen.
Yes.
As kids, we get asked, what are you going to become? And it's typically like, you're going to be a teacher or a doctor. I didn't have a name for it, but I knew that that is what I wanted to do. There was also a relative of ours, Doc Bigicha, who wrote for the Sunday Times. And every time I read the newspaper and I saw his byline, I'd be so excited. I'd be like, who is this man who's carrying my name? I didn't know that he was this famous journalist from the drum era. So every time I saw his name as well, that also inspired me. I want to do what Doc is doing. That but of course, amazing. I ended up in broadcasting and not in print.
Yeah. But you see the power of having role models
and representation. Representation is everything.
And to see yourself, oh, if they can do it, Nami, I can actually get there.
You know?
Amazing. So now this love, okay, and obviously you ended up going and you studied. But now, when was the first time you actually traveled outside of South Africa? And what was that about?
You know, I think journalism is a wonderful career because it opens up the world to
absolutely.
You, not only through words and describing the world and describing what you see, even though my first journalism job was at Prime Media, which is, of course, a local news station. Our main focus was always domestic news. There were opportunities to travel. And one of the first places that I traveled to was to cover the Zimbabwe elections. That was the first time I actually I left South Africa. So that would have been early 2000, maybe 2000, 2001. And I think we recall how tumultuous those times were in Zim. So I traveled mostly around the region, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Botswana, if there were major news developments in the region. But the first time I traveled for myself, something that was fun, it was the Vic Falls.
Oh, really?
Magical. I remain in awe of the Vic Falls. I absolutely had the most magnificent time.
So when you went to the Vic Falls for yourself now, so the first time you traveled, you went to Zim for the elections. And now you went, so Zim, Zimbabwe, Zambia is closed. So which side of the falls did you actually travel to?
To the Zambia side. So that's why I make the distinction between my trip to Zimbabwe. And so I went the Zambia side. And that wonderful flight as you descend over that town and you can hear the rumbling of the falls. I thought, this is mind-blowing. So I'm a fan and of nature and natural wonders, and having read a lot as a child about something like the Vic Falls and, you know, that flawed history that we get told that David Livingstone discovered.
Right.
So having read all of that, to see it and experience for myself was just
amazing. So something interesting. When you post online, when I post online about Vic Falls and I put Zambia, there will be a whole lot of comments of people from Zimbabwe who will be like, this is actually Zimbabwe.
Yes.
Do you know about why is there tug of war? It's like fighting with Ghana and Nigeria and about jollof rice. And here we are fighting about the Vic Falls.
And Zimbabweans will insist that the view is better from their side.
I've heard.
I will not get caught up in that. In that battle, count me out. I just think that the falls are magnificent.
And if you can,
it's definitely something that you should try and do. So that was the first time I traveled out of the country for myself. But my first major international trip was also work-related. And it was a place that I had never even imagined going to.
It
was Pakistan.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
And how was that experience?
Sure. To this day, I mean, I haven't been back since, but it was extraordinary because it was probably around 2003 or so. I don't know if you recall this, Lelo, but at the time after the 9/11 attacks, the US retaliated in Pakistan and in Afghanistan. And unfortunately, what had happened then, a journalist from the Wall Street Journal, Daniel Pearl, I don't know if you remember the story, he was one of the first people to fall victim to, at the time, what were known as the beheadings. It was a big story. Journalists had not come under attack. It was a terrible incident. So a few months or even a year after that, the Pakistani government was on a big drive to try and create a positive impression of its country and to assure various nations that journalists were safe in Pakistan.
You can come in.
And so they approached South Africa as well. And South Africa got a team of journalists from various publications, broadcasting, print, etc.
To go on this,
you know, what would have it's not a junket,
you know,
I suppose, but
it's
a charm offensive by the Pakistani government. my news editor at the time said, of course, because you're in essence embedded with the government, we can't report on it, but go for the experience. Yes. And that's exactly how I perceived it. So I spent 3 weeks in Pakistan.
3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Yo, they wanted
incredible.
To make sure.
We went to all the major cities, Islamabad, Lahore, Karachi. What a thrilling experience that was.
Serious?
An incredible, vibrant, massive country, right? I had never been to a place that is so heavily and densely populated. Mm. And just to immerse yourself in that culture. And the food, of course, is extraordinary, right? Mm. And the other thing that has always stayed with me is that it's very difficult to get to Kashmir, for example. Mm. Kashmir is on the foothills of the Himalayas.
Sure.
They took us to Kashmir. And I often wonder about that. I mean, the experience was absolutely fantastic. Beautiful. And I learned a lot about the politics, the culture, the history. That was the whole point, right? Mm. But I often think that the idea of creating the impression that the country was safe for journalists was counterintuitive, given that we had a military escort the entire time.
Yeah,
so of course we were
actually
safe.
Thinking
we were,
about
of course
that because
we were
they,
safe,
made, they wanted
you know?
To make sure that you can get to you know,
exactly.
anywhere and you are protected throughout. But actually, shouldn't
but it
be?
Was a priceless experience. I mean, it's very rare that people travel to Kashmir all along to the border with India, which is a contested area between Pakistan and India. For me, it was extraordinary. And I came back with all sorts of fabrics and tapestries and rugs and just a wonderful experience.
But also, I think it's always the places that we never think of where we come back with these experiences and these stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Quite right.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to my favorite.
Back to Africa.
Back to Africa.
Also my favorite.
So you got this. Tell me about how this Africa connected thing got to happen, because what a dream.
Yeah.
Can somebody who wants to do Africa connected? I've got a mentor who will help me do it properly. So, I mean, tell me about that experience. Where did you get to go? Why did you say yes to it as well? And I just want to hear all about it.
All right. So, just to segue into that, is that I had been a journalist for over 20 years.
Yes.
So I had left hard news, as it were, in 2015. And I took that very seriously, because with the growth of content and declining revenues for news, there's increasing pressure on newsrooms to do paid content, right?
Mm.
And I always felt very strongly that if I was still in the newsroom and considered myself an objective news journalism, I wouldn't do paid for content whilst I was still doing that. So once I'd left, I felt quite liberated to then explore all that kind
whatever.
Of, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a stalwart of the Eyewitness newsroom. So when 702 approached me, because I was already doing some freelance work.
I loved listening to you. I mean, oh my goodness. The way you speak, I was like, oh my goodness. The English, Ipumakaringa. Like, I love listening to you. But anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No problem. No, it's fine. So I had, you know, I was a veteran of the 702 newsroom.
Yeah.
I've always had very good relationships at Prime Media, at 702, at Cape Talk even, which is where I got my start. So when I was approached by them with this idea, and I was told that it was a partnership between 702 and Standard Bank, and essentially Standard Bank wanted, in a sense, to showcase its footprint on the continent. From 702's perspective, it was about opening up the conversation about travel on the continent.
I loved it.
And South Africans, I think not many South Africans have had the opportunity or the access to travel on the continent. And sometimes that may inform some of the insular and perhaps myopic views about what we understand about the continent.
Yeah.
So I thought, I found it to be an opportunity to educate, to create awareness for myself as well, to learn.
Yes.
I had only traveled around Southern Africa and parts of East Africa. I was completely intrigued, and I said yes immediately.
I will do it.
And I think part of the reason you enjoyed it is because the novelty and the exuberance came across.
Yes.
I wasn't there for some journalistic project. I was there to learn. I was in awe. And I'm so glad that translated.
No, it did. Because for me, you were talking as someone who, oh my goodness, I discovered this, you know, you were excited about the experience. It's not like, oh, you know, this is what it is. I think the energy that you brought for me, it made me so curious. I mean, you're talking about, you know, the economics of it, the business, doing business there and all of that. And that wasn't something I was interested in, but it got me hooked.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's years later, but well done.
And you know that it's 10 years ago.
Really?
I'm shocked. Because when you asked me to have this conversation, I had to go and look at some of that material. It's like, oh my goodness, was it in 2016? How old am I? it feels like just the other day, you know?
And to think that it's still stuck in my head all these years later, because it planted something. I started this podcast, I think it was 2019, but I had this thing that I loved what that did. But anyway, you were telling me about where did you go? What were some of the highlights?
So I confess that it having been 10 years ago,
I know.
It's very difficult to remember things as vividly and as with as much enthusiasm as I did then, even though I absolutely loved the experience. And much like you, I thought it was one of the best things that I've ever done, even though outside of the formal confines of journalism, if you will. What were the highlights?
or maybe what were some of the places that you went to that you remember?
I remember all of them. I remember all of them, but perhaps not with as much granular detail. Yes. I suppose let me start with this. Having traveled around Southern Africa and being slightly familiar with that, I'd been to Tanzania, I'd been to Kenya as well on holiday, and I'd been to Zanzibar. So that's different. Yes. You know, you're not there to question, to explore, to learn. You're just there to have fun. Mm. I went there not having any preconceived notions or assumptions. Mm. The only thing that was driving me was curiosity. Mm-hmm. So from the onset, I put on my journalistic hat because I think you block yourself with any experience, really, whether it's travel or not. If you go in there with preconceived notions, you will not learn.
Mm.
You have to be open to the experience and be curious to understand. Mm. And so I unleashed that energy. Mm. And I think as a result, it rewarded me so much, you know.
Mm.
I was particularly interested in West Africa, having never been there by myself. Mm. I mean, Lagos. You read about it, you see it depicted in Nollywood or in movies. Nothing can prepare you for the energy and the pace of that city and how populous it is. Mm. And I just thought, oh my God, this is electrifying. That's what I thought about Lagos.
And I think one thing with Lagos, you either love it or you hate it. Yeah. I love Lagos.
Yeah.
I love Lagos. And I know there's a friend of mine who was, I think last year, he got to go to Lagos. And before he went, I was like, oh my God, I wish I was going. And then he came back, he's like, what did you mean? So you either love it or hate it.
Really?
And I'm also the same. Like, I felt like, oh my God, the energy.
Yeah.
You know, the go-getter energy. Absolutely. That's there. Everybody's like pushing, you know, everybody's hustling. I love the
place. I love that. Yeah. And you don't want to go into a place and stereotype and generalize, but you walk away with a very distinct sense of people on the go.
Yeah.
You know, a city on the go, very dynamic, Victoria Island, extraordinary infrastructure. And I think what also guided and helped to frame Africa Connected, but it was essentially, let us go and find out what the economic landscape is. What are the economic opportunities? Mm. What can South Africans learn? What can Nigerians learn, etc., and vice versa, and create that sense of shared prosperity and growth. So it was about trying to understand that. But I suppose the main takeaway from me from all of the countries outside of the aesthetics and what I thought is the extent of the imprint and footprint of South African business on the continent was far greater than I had ever imagined. I think we all know about the big retailers and the big banks. But I was struck by that because a lot of that only started post-94 and that it was able to really move very quickly and establish itself across the continent. So that was striking. The nightlife was in all of the countries that I went to. I made sure that I was in the art, right? I'm not wasting my time. You have to experience every little thing. So you go to the market, you eat the food.
Yes.
I ate a lot in Africa. I tried everything. I never missed things. So in Lagos, I had the suya, was my favorite. Everywhere I went, the fish is exceptional.
Oh, it's
with
amazing.
Pepe, yes. Very fresh.
Egusi.
Egusi. Oh my gosh. I tasted
yam,
everything.
All of those.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh. And I found similarly then in West Africa, Côte d'Ivoire. Now, very distinctly different because of the language, right? Mm. But what a magnificent city, right? And it's got this lagoon running through the city. I'm fascinated by water, as you know. So
yes.
Places with a body of water that runs through the city, much like Istanbul, one of my favorite places in the world. I was completely captivated by Abidjan. I had a fantastic time, and the people just so
friendly,
embracing and warm and welcoming and curious and interested to know why I was there, what I wanted to know.
And taking care of you. Yes.
That reciprocity wherever I went, it left me feeling very warm inside.
Yeah.
I appreciated that.
You know,
I
haven't been to a whole lot of, I can probably count them in like maybe one or two. Wow. But everywhere I've been in the continent, I've always been received with so much love.
Absolutely.
And so much warmth. Mm-hmm. So whatever this whole thing that's happening is, it hurts.
It hurts me,
because it hurts because you're like, oh my goodness, now I don't know when I go to these places, it's like, this is what you guys are doing.
How are we going to be received?
Yes. Yeah. And it worries me so, so much, because I know where the issue comes from, sure, and everything, but it I don't want to, like, it hurts. Yeah. And it makes me just think about, my goodness, if only I could give you the love that you gave me in all of these places that I've been to. And even Lagos, like, always felt taken care of, welcomed warmly. But
and safe.
Yeah. And safe.
And safe.
Yeah.
So this is the other thing that I would take away. Is that as we were exploring and going out at night, we felt very safe. These were two women.
Yeah.
It would be me and a videographer exploring.
Mm.
These are not things I would do easily in Johannesburg at night, And I experienced that everywhere, actually.
Mm.
So that's always something to consider. But my big lesson about that experience is that we as Africans, we can only thrive and be prosperous if we embrace each other, and that we realize that you can't elevate one region over another or allow one other region to extract from you for the growth of its own people.
Mm.
If we detangle some of the infrastructure backlogs and all the bureaucracy that keeps us separate, which are colonial constructs, right?
Definitely.
It's up to us to detangle that and deconstruct it completely so that we work in unison, whether we trade together, we travel to each other's countries and reciprocate the shared culture, shared knowledge, and just the diversity and variety of what our countries have to offer is so amazing and so beautiful.
Yeah.
The natural wonders that our continent has to offer, and so many of us have not experienced them or have gone to see them. I wish that for us collectively.
And you know what? I don't know why I'm getting emotional over this conversation.
I'm sorry.
Nikki, must stop it.
I'm sorry.
But I think that's what makes it sad for me. Because, like, so many of us are going to miss out on just the beauty that sits in all these different parts of the continent because of whatever it is. But anyway,
I hope it doesn't come to that.
So, where have you not been in the continent where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't wait? Bucket list.
So, listen, I mean, with Africa Connected, I only did 8 countries. It felt like a lot.
Yeah.
But because I would spend about a week in each major capital.
Okay.
That's the other thing. To go to Lagos is not to know Nigeria.
Yes,
that would be
that
utterly presumptuous and superficial. So I would still like to explore more of Nigeria, etc. But of the 8 countries that I went to, I will definitely go back to all.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that I'm very, very keen to go to next is Morocco, because of the surfing. Amongst many other things. Because, I mean, it's extraordinarily beautiful, right?
Yeah.
And magnificent and art and
culture. I've heard good things.
History.
I've heard good things about Morocco. Yeah. I think Azania was the one who was talking about Morocco as
well. She has been. I saw her pictures on Instagram.
Yeah.
I've been very keen to go to Morocco for a number of years. And then when I learned about the surfing camp that takes place there and these beautiful waves, I was like,
So I know you travel, you run as well.
Yes, I used to.
you travel because of the running and now surfing as well?
Do I travel because of the running?
Or do you run because of the travel?
Okay, so to put it into context, I was always a very short distance runner. From the time I was like in my 30s, I just ran for a bit of exercise. Mm. I had no aspirations of being a marathoner or anything of the sort.
Yeah.
Until a friend of mine, Ulondi, whom I run with, she decided that she wanted to do the 6-star Abbott World Majors. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'm game, whatever. Any excuse to travel the world, all right?
Yeah.
So we started training for that, and I loved it so much. And it was such an incredible experience. So we said, I will try as much as possible to accompany you to all the others. It's a great way to see the world. But of course, after making that commitment, my own career changed so dramatically that I had traveled to all of those places by the time we would have planned for those marathons. So it didn't seem as exciting or as enticing. So I sort of left it for a few years.
Mm.
But I've decided to practice what I preach. I've committed to the 6-star marathons. I must do it. I've done about 4 of them now.
Okay.
So I've got 2 outstanding and I must get that done.
What are the two outstanding ones?
It's Boston. Mm-hmm. It's Boston and Chicago. We won't talk about Tokyo because that's one I have to go back for as well. And then outside of the world majors, I also did Paris and Rio. Rio was fantastic because I got to travel with my sister, and my sister and I had always wanted to go to Brazil together. It was amazing.
Okay. I don't like it when people come here and talk about Brazil because Brazil is like, my dream.
Have you not been yet?
No.
Wow. Okay.
No, I think you did not invite me when you and your sister were going.
But what's
that process like? What is it like when you discover a city through the whole, you know, I'm going there, we're running, da da da. What is it like and what's the preparation? Do you, and I think maybe what I'm also interested in is it that when you plan for it, is it different to how when you're just planning like a holiday, for example, in terms of what you look for?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's very different because there's a lot of discipline in the training for the marathon, so you have to be quite guarded about what you do in the run-up to the race itself.
Mm.
And then we typically plan and curate some activities for after, activities that you'll be able to participate in if you're not too exhausted. And you have to be mindful of the number of days that you spend there because it can be expensive. Yes. So typically we like to spend about, you know, a week after a marathon. Mm. So there's a different kind of thinking as opposed to, oh, I'm going to Paris, I'm going to be living it up, you know.
Yeah.
You know, pop those bottles. Only after the running can you pop the bottles. But I also think that seeing a city through running is far more detailed, in fact, and less curated than you would if you're taking a hop-on, hop-off bus.
Yeah.
You know, there the city is showing off its best.
Mm-hmm.
By its nature, the marathon distance of 42 kilometers is going to take you all over. You're going to meander through all sorts of nooks and crannies, the grittier parts, down the industrial areas, and you will have set foot there.
Mm-hmm.
You will have experienced it firsthand.
Yeah.
And I think that's been part of the thrill for me. And then, of course, you then have the touristy experience after the fact. I love
it. Okay. Yeah. And then Brazil. I know I said I don't want to talk about it, but I'm curious.
Okay.
You went to Rio.
Yes.
What did you guys love? You went with your sister.
With my sister. I experienced a lot of the major tourist hotspots. We were right in Copacabana. We had a fantastic hotel, by the way, with magnificent views of the ocean.
Oh, so you were right there.
We were right there. So that was amazing. The food was delightful. The people, the company being on the beach, people are very, very friendly, right? And of course, we went to see the major landmarks.
Did it feel like being here, or it felt completely different? Because there's this thing, I don't know, people say about it, it feels like you're in South Africa or something.
There are obvious similarities, I think, because it is a black population, mixed race population, and so it's got that same vibrance and energy and sense of fun.
It didn't feel like being in Cape Town.
I wouldn't be that specific, but it does remind me, in a sense. And there are a number of cities, actually, that remind me of Cape Town. Dakar is one of them. I felt distinctly, when I was in Dakar, I felt like, Sure, this reminds me of home. San Francisco, San Diego. Really? Very similar coastal city infrastructure and vibe. But back to your question about Brazil, because it is mixed and very diverse, I can see how people can draw that conclusion. Yeah. And of course, the favelas. And great inequality, which you see in Cape Town
the
as
common,
well.
The common stuff. So there's something else that I want to ask you about you going to Oxford.
Yes.
But before we get there, what was that about Tokyo?
So you thought it slipped. I caught it. Good journalism. Good listening. So earlier this year, I went to run the Tokyo Marathon, which was going to be my fourth star. I did not make it. I got cut off. I was absolutely devastated. I was running with Londi. We had a very bad race day.
Did Londi make it?
No, we both didn't make it. Okay. So we could console each other. Listen, I don't want to whinge after the fact, but I did think that the cutoffs were really unfair because the world majors are typically quite lenient that if you can finish it within 7 hours, that's fine. But they have certain cutoffs along the route, which I was not aware of. And then it was particularly hot on the day. So I felt quite dehydrated and I was stopping along the way.
Meanwhile,
so I did not make it.
I'm sorry.
I was devastated.
Gives you another reason to go.
And I'm definitely going
beautiful.
Back. I love Tokyo. So it was my second time in Japan.
Yeah.
So, and it's one of the most extraordinary countries I've ever been.
Wow.
And to talk about key takeaways from a place, I often think when you travel to Asia or, you know, to China, you worry. I mean, this is something I experienced in Pakistan, and we were warned about this, particularly in rural, far-flung areas, is that people don't often see black people, so they may
point stop and pull,
you know, so
ask
you
for
know,
pictures,
it was fine. Yeah, exactly. I thought that Japan would be like that, and it wasn't. Japan is, in fact, one of the only few places that I have felt so not black. You know what I mean?
Really?
Well, you are not seen.
Yes.
There's that gaze that you get around. You know when people look at you, it's like they're curious to see why you're here and how it is that you happen to be in Davos.
Okay.
Japan is completely oblivious.
Okay, that's
so that's
good.
Which is it's wonderful. Yes. It's wonderful. Yeah. I enjoyed that. Ah. You know?
Oof, and the food, of course.
Oh, my goodness, magnificent. Absolutely to die for.
Yeah. No, look, everybody that I've spoken to who's been to Japan is like, go. It's absolutely amazing.
You must. Yeah. So I've been to Kyoto and Tokyo. Worth exploring.
Yeah.
Massive, massive cities.
Oof.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that I'm confused about is that typically you hear that Japan has an aging population. That's why its economy hasn't been growing as well. There's so many young people. There are masses of young people in these major cities. Maybe the aging population is in the rural areas. I don't know.
Perhaps,
but I myself did not see it.
Yeah.
So perhaps it's relative to,
to
that.
Oh, very interesting. So you've been around
a little bit.
And still more
still
places
going.
To see. Isn't that nice? Like, you can count all of these amazing places you've been to, but there's still so much more that you haven't seen. The world is so big.
Yeah, but, you know, thank you so much for asking me to be on the show, because it allowed me a chance to reflect.
Yes.
And to take stock and to fully appreciate it, because I don't think I had. You know, you travel and you move on and you keep going. And you're like, these are the things you used to dream of. Take stock and appreciate them. Look at you.
Yeah, you did it.
You've done it.
Way more than what you dreamed of,
exactly.
Actually.
Yeah. Way more. And that's wonderful.
Oh, yeah, thank you. So, Oxford. So, you went there to do African studies.
Yes.
Okay, I don't understand it, even in my old age. So, tell me firstly why the decision to go to Oxford and why to study African studies.
Okay.
Okay.
So, why Oxford?
Yes.
Firstly,
because it's Oxford.
Well, yes, plainly because it's Oxford. And Oxford isn't just Oxford because it's Oxford. And we like to have the name Oxen after our degree titles. Oxford is the best teaching and learning university in the world. It has the best resources. It has the best researcher. And typically, as a result of that, will attract the best academics. So whatever it is that you're going to study, whether it's area studies, international studies, or politics, or international relations, typically the leaders in those fields are at Oxford because they themselves want to be associated with that. Now, depending on your area of research or line of inquiry that you want to follow, if you're doing at a master's level, you're following the supervisor. Who is the thought leader in that area and where are they? They are likely to be found at Oxford. But let me come back to why Oxford and why African studies. It is also that I didn't actually choose it. It chose me. And I know this sounds a bit funny.
The lucky people always say that.
Like
that.
It's like, so this is 2016, 2017. I'm in the thick of doing my master's at Wits. I'm struggling. I'm eking out my thesis. I'm scrambling around Africa doing Africa Connected. The last thing I would have wanted to do is another master's in the middle of that.
Yeah.
But because of the level of interest in Africa Connected and the reporting and the content that I was creating, I was getting a lot of invites to write articles, to present papers, and to speak on what I'd seen. And I thought it was very exciting. It's a wonderful opportunity, but I felt ill-equipped to do that. It's one thing to go as a curious person to Lagos and Kampala and Maputo, but quite another to be asked to speak with a great deal of authority. I felt I did not have it. And I thought, I can describe, I can explain, but I think what you're asking me to do requires something a bit more in depth, with theoretical underpinnings, with a nuanced understanding of that history, and the interwoven areas of study, because it is a social science, right, to understand how societies operate.
Yes.
And I felt I was ill-equipped. So as I'm contemplating this, my supervisor at Wits is like knocking on my door, like, where is this paper? The algorithm churns out an advert. I kid you not, Little.
Wow.
The University of Oxford is inviting people to participate in this master's. It's got this program. I was like, what? What do you mean? What is this? African studies?
Yeah.
At Oxford? I mean, what are the chances? At a time when I'm thinking about
that,
how do I build on what I've learned? How do I make that it more authoritative and have gravitas?
Yes.
And I read about this African studies master's program, which is interdisciplinary, so it would combine economy, development, history, politics, society. That interrogation, that were precisely the kinds of questions I was asking myself and what I was observing. So I thought, why not? Let me apply. Not going to respond to my supervisor, but I'm going to apply for this thing.
Yeah.
I applied for it, submitted the essays, the motivating, this, that, and the other, and promptly forgot about it. It was as random as that.
Yeah.
And then maybe 6 weeks later, I'm driving back from Pretoria, from some, I see this email. It's like, dear Nikiwe Bigicha, student number 100.
Yeah, but like, nah, acceptance.
I was like, this, that, you know, that very distinct Oxford blue.
I'm
like,
oh
God, they're talking to me. Because I had to write a motivational essay about why. And so obviously I spoke about my Africa Connected experience and why I wanted to understand it better. But they accepted me on the basis of that. I'm like, that's it.
Wait, so what happened to the vets?
No, I was almost done.
You're almost done.
I had the very crazy and that unusual experience that I eventually submitted. Remember, Oxford is now a few months later to go and start. It is in September. Submitted my dissertation in April at Wits. And left it.
I'm not waiting for graduation next year. I'm going to Oxford.
Wow. And so the term starts in September.
Yeah.
And the first break is in December. So I came back home to graduate at Wits.
Oh, wow.
And then went back to continue my studies.
And what was it like being there?
What a dreamy little town, right? You see it in the pictures. And I don't think they do justice to it.
Really?
Honestly, travel to London is fairly easy. Most of us will travel to London. I urge you, take the train to Oxford. Take the bus. It's under an hour away.
Okay.
It's the most magical place. And that sense of the weight of the history, you know, a university that is, what, 400 years old or whatever.
Yes.
The architecture, it is extraordinary. The resources at the library, the Bodleian or many other libraries, to touch those artifacts, which, of course, some of us are from Africa, are ours, is part of the experience and the story. Oh, just even a day.
Wow.
And maybe if you go in spring, you can go punting, just have that full collegiate experience. Yeah. And it's not, and you can go back to London same evening, you know?
Wow.
Please do.
So being there, it felt like, wow, yeah. I'm at Oxford.
It was hard.
Mm.
It was incredibly hard work. Mm. And I remember one of my tutors, I bumped into him. I was on my way, trudging through the snow, going to the library, doing some or other research paper. Looking like a zombie. Mm. And he said to me the next day, I saw you at the library at midnight. I'm like, yeah. It's like, I'm really tired.
Mm.
He says, that's the Oxford experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
We expect you to read about 100 pages a day, at the very least, the very minimum, for you to do well here.
Mm.
And so there are a lot of essays, a lot of presentations to your peers in those tutoring sessions. And then, of course, the dissertation as well.
Yes, that you have to deliver at the end.
Exactly. And the dissertation requires fieldwork back on the continent, right? It would be silly to do it anywhere else.
Mm.
So it was incredibly challenging. Mm.
And did it give you what you hoped it would give you?
And more.
Mm.
It absolutely did. Because I have this experience of having traveled to some of these countries, and I have my very own limited superficial understanding and limited.
Yeah.
But the questions I went there to interrogate about the role of South African capital in the continent and how it sees itself and how it moves. Is it a partner in those countries? Yes. Is it hegemonic? Mm. Is it extractive?
Now
is it
you're asking different questions.
Absolutely.
Different lens.
Completely different lens. You know, how are we to understand this?
Mm.
And what can be done differently? Mm-hmm. So those were the things I was there to query for myself, to add some weight to what I'd observed as a journalist. Yeah.
Take us to Africa. So if you think about just the continent and maybe even outside of the continent, is there a destination that you feel like absolutely not spoken about as much as it should be? Or
Istanbul.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
Have you been?
Because I was telling my last guest that actually, what's the thing with Istanbul? So, because she was saying it's her favorite place in the world. So you are also saying Istanbul.
I think I find it difficult to choose a particular place that would be my favorite.
Yes.
But to your question about a place that I think deserves more recognition.
So much more.
Mm. It's a magnificent place. Okay. Magical and beautiful. And I think part of it, back to the point about reading and how reading has always transported me. A few years ago, I'd read the novelist Orhan Pamuk. And he has written this extraordinary memoir about Istanbul. It's like a love letter to his city, right? And my interest was sparked after reading that.
Wow.
And I wanted to see how he had observed it. And he writes about a melancholy that you feel in the city, the locals feel.
Mm.
And he attributes that to something of a sense of loss and empire. You know, we were kings and royalty once, and now look at us. But also to the Bosphorus, which runs through the city. I mean, imagine. I was captivated by that. But I think what also makes it unique and intriguing is that it divides East and West, right there in the same city.
Mm.
And you see the distinctions wherever you go, whether it's in the architecture, design, style, culture, food, nightlife, you know. It's quite striking.
That's amazing. So,
and the people there are amazing.
Yeah.
Very.
And the food?
I found the food okay. It wasn't terrible, but
I love food, so
me too. I'm a big foodie, so it wasn't bad.
Yeah,
really, but it's not the
main attraction.
It's the main attraction.
I
respond to beauty and aesthetics, so natural beauty.
Mm.
I was in awe. I was just gobsmacked by its terrain.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, if I don't go to Istanbul this year, then I don't listen to my guests because everybody's
I'll
coming.
I'll be watching you.
Yeah, after Italy. Wait.
Oh,
I almost ended the interview before asking. You went to Italy. You went with your mom.
Yes.
I was like, oh my goodness. How was that experience for her?
Oh, she absolutely loved it. And thanks to you for your support and advice and
I'm
guidance.
I'm always happy
on that.
To help on Italy.
I know you are the Amalfi person. So I mean, I had been to Italy on a Contiki many, many years ago. Yeah. You know, you do that Mediterranean highlight and you zip through it. And but it's the lens and the perspective of a child, really. Not a child. I mean, I was almost 30s. I wasn't young. But and the budget is also that of a young person. Of course, so the experience is very different, you know.
Yeah.
So my mother, who is, as you know, on Instagram and other social media, had this fascination and obsession with the Amalfi Coast. Ah. And she has been talking about it for years. And my sister and I were like, oh, geez, this mom and this the Amalfi Coast. This lady and the Amalfi Coast.
And this expensive place.
This expensive place. So the Amalfi Coast and Portofino, she just wanted to go. So we then decided, okay, she's got this big milestone birthday. She's turning 80. Maybe that's what we should do. She doesn't want to have a big party. So let's just use that and take her and travel, you know?
That was beautiful. Ah, yo, the fan Mugele was living her best life.
She still talks about it nonstop today. She enjoyed absolutely every aspect of it. So we went to Florence and then went to via Naples to the Amalfi because she thought it was dreamy.
But you still came back and gave her a party or something.
No, it was just a family dinner. No, she was
adamant. Because you were like, you have to celebrate with the family.
She was adamant about that. Said no big fancy, you know, high table dinners. I don't want that. I just want to go away and I want to be with my immediate family.
Oh, no, that is beautiful. I think if you can do that for your parent,
and absolutely. It's part of why I am actually here on the show, to say thank you for all your tips about Amalfi.
Oh, thank you.
She had an amazing time, and we followed all of your guidance. Mm. Yeah.
Right. Amalfi any day. I still want to go back to Amalfi. And
for the harmony of time.
Italy, you can go back any time.
And the food there, of course, is incomparable.
Stunning.
Absolutely incomparable. Yeah.
Thank you. This has been so beautiful. Where to next? Because I know there must be.
So for fun, for leisure, I've tended to scale down on that over the past year
because work has
become very demanding. I've got these two global roles, and one of them rotates between New York, London, and Toronto. So invariably, any quarter of the year, I might be in those places.
Okay.
The other can be anywhere in the world. So yeah, so my next stop, London in New York, December in Toronto. What I've tried to do in the past is if there's a show taking place around those places, I love music, live performances, then I will extend my stay and enjoy that.
Yeah.
But I want to try next year to find time for myself, my own trip.
But I think it's also difficult, especially if you travel so much because of work. Then it's like, can I just chill and enjoy my Cape Town? So you're not a person who like, no, I'm not going anywhere where it's cold, because we hear you talking about Toronto in December.
Well, listen, it's the timing of the meeting. It's not something I would have chosen for myself. So I've got high tolerance levels for the cold. I struggle with the heat.
Okay.
The corollary is true for me. So.
But thank you so much. This is absolutely awesome. I'm so happy you came and I got to sit with you.
Because I actually got to meet. Social media makes us think we know each other. Oh, and the gym.
But at the gym, it's like, hello.
And then
we can't even hug properly.
Oh, I'm so delighted to meet you. This means so much.
And you just landed from Cape Town and you're like, yes, I'm coming. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the conversation. Really, really hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. So please do like, share, and tell everybody about Chica Travel. And I hope to see you on the next episode. Goodbye. Bye.